Hello
Hello
there.
Welcome back to another episode of Star Wars and Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Eli.
I'm Jacob.
And today, we are continuing with our final episode, our second and final episode of season 16 and a half of Star Wars and the Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. We are concluding our half season 16 and a half, episode 128, with our coverage of Star Wars Vision season 2, at least the stuff we've gotten to this. In this timeline, we've got three shorts to cover today. We got the Bandits of Golok in the Stars and the Pit. I think probably, not that I haven't loved a lot of the other Vision shorts, but I think of all of the groups, I think this might be the best we've gotten so far.
There's some real interesting material
in
here.
I'm particularly fond of all three of them, but especially there's a certain one that I'll talk about later that my favorite short of Visions is in this one. I'm not going to say which one it is, but my favorite shorts of Vision, my favorite one of Visions is in this group. These are the Reign of the Empire ones, specifically for those of you who are asking, who may ask about the Spy Dancer, which was made by a French studio for Vision Season 2, because it also is an anti-imperial struggle. That one specifically takes place, is denoted to take place on, according to Wikipedia, by some stuff, and this makes sense to me. Because it also is a part of the wider Imperial Rebellion conflict. So it must take place closer to A New Hope. And Wikipedia even places it after the destruction of the first Death Star. So that's why we're not doing it. Yeah, so of course, we're doing our chronological watch of Star Wars. And so, of course, that explains why next episode and next we're going backwards in Star Wars. Of course,
yeah.
Why wouldn't we? Star Wars has already been messed up so much, so fucking much with the timeline, with Young Jedi Avengers, with Bad Batch. Acolyte's gonna mess it up even more for us this year. We're just doing it when we can. Honestly, it's just a vibe. Honestly, we just do what we can. Yeah,
it's chaos at this point. It is.
It's chaos at this point. It's me having to postpone Rebels further and further back, and I feel so bad for Jacob because I know he's so excited to get to it. And I am
It'll be all the sweeter when we finally get to Rebels.
And believe me, I want to get to Rebels as much as you do. I want another four season, like I want another multi-season show to sink our teeth into, like we did with TCW. But hopefully, but of course, a lot
hopefully
shorter.
Not that long. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be four seasons. Really, I think of Rebels as three seasons because the first and final season are half the length of the second and third. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's do this. Jacob, can you summarize the first two?
Yeah. So, in The Bandits of Golok, Charuk and Rani, brother and sister, are on a train attempting to escape Imperial forces. Despite Rani's fears of having to leave their village and father behind, Charuk comforts her by playing a game of bandits on the train when a tray of lollipops passes by. And it's revealed that Rani has the Force because she uses the Force to grab her flute from Charuk as he goes to buy some of the lollipops. A couple of passengers report Rani to the stormtroopers on the train, and Charuk has to steal the lollipops as a distraction just as the train passes through a bandit's nest, a nest of real bandits, not the play bandits. So Rani and Charuk manage to outwit the stormtroopers and escape in a scintillating high-speed sequence as the train also escapes the bandits. They arrive in a small town, and Charuk carries Rani to the end of town where a small oasis of sorts is waiting for them. They arrive, and they meet the denizens, who are led by the elderly woman, Regal, who warns the siblings that a storm is coming. They need to prepare themselves. And just as they're settling in, the oasis is visited by an inquisitor and his guards. And the inquisitor, he knows about the incident on the train. He knows about Rani, and he wants to take her for the Empire. As they are talking, a bunch of plates start floating around, but Rani denies that. But because of this, a fight breaks out. A fight breaks out as the storm arrives. Now, the woman Regal reveals that she is actually a Jedi, and she battles and defeats the Inquisitor. His last words saying, I can't believe, or he expressing disbelief that a Jedi was in Golok. Now, Regal opens a tunnel underneath a pond and tells Charuk that she needs to take Rani so that she can train to be a Jedi. Their siblings share a goodbye as Charuk gives Rani the flute, and as the pond closes up, Rani's flute floats back to the top, and Charuk happily takes it, telling his sister, may the Force be with you. Next up, we have In the Stars. So this one's also about a pair of siblings. So two sisters, Khotan and Tachina, are sisters who have two sisters, Kotha and Chechina, whose planet has been ravaged by the Empire. All their clean water has been taken away by the Empire, leaving their planet kind of a dirty, polluted wasteland. And Chechina is convinced that they're not strong enough to defeat the Empire and their factory, which has caused the pollution. But Khotan thinks that it's possible, or that it's not possible. Because years ago, their mother led a revolt against the Empire, but she and the entire rebellion were killed, and they became the stars that now look down on them. But with the heavily polluted sky, it's impossible for the sisters to see the stars of their mother and others. So Khotan sets out to steal clean water for the sisters, but Chechina insists to come along as well so that they can fight the Empire's factory. But Khotan turns her down and she leaves. As she's collecting the clean water from the factory, Chechina also has snuck in, but is caught by several officers. So Khotan rescues her and they have to flee the facility, fighting the Imperial officers on their way through. But as they're about to make their escape, Chechina turns around and decides that she will face them herself, but unable to access the Force due to her inexperience, she is caught. But Khotan, who has been withholding the Force, comes back for her sister and rescues her. The two of them stand together and use the Force to tear at the structure's base, knocking down the factory towers and causing all the water to drown the factory and its occupants. Khotan and Chechina make it back to dry land and notice that not only has the life came back to their planet, but the sky is clearing up and they can see the stars of their mother and the other rebels. They notice that their mother's star is the brightest and they remark that it looks happy. And that's in the stars.
In the pit. Imperial prisoners are brought to an unidentified desert planet to dig a giant pit in the ground. It's revealed very quickly that the Empire is provoking this forced labor under pain of death or severe injury and is making these workers work in inhumane conditions. One of the workers breaks through to find a kyber crystal, which is revealed that's what the Empire is looking for. This pit is dug down thousands of meters at least until they hit an area where they cannot mine anymore. At which point the Empire abandons all of the workers in the mine, in the pit, and just leaves them there. They use their new resources to build a city on the planet called Crystal City, with the inhabitants blissfully unaware of the labor that was used and that was abused to create the city in which they now live. A young man named Crux decides he is going to try and scale the pit and get out of the hole and try to get some people from Crystal City to help. He does successfully get out of the hole with the help from an armadillo that's burrowing in the walls of the pit that provides him spaces to reach for as he climbs up. He gets into Crystal City and it's hard to get people to care at first, but he finally makes a speech telling the people of Crystal City of the truth about the pit and how their town was created. And he tells them something he told is a young girl down there about following the light. That's a big thing. Follow the light. And if they follow the light, then they can all unify and take down the Empire. He runs from the Empire, but he is stunned by them once they find him, and he is tossed back into the pit to his death. But in light of Crux's untimely death, the people in the pit start chanting, follow the light. And it eventually gets to the village, which starts to chant, follow the light. Although the Empire tries to stop them, ultimately they power through the stormtroopers and ultimately send a ship down to get the workers back up to the surface from the pit, freeing them from their nightmare. On the ship, Livy has one of the kyber crystals that they mined in the pit, and she picks it up and starts floating it with the Force, at which point it turns blue. After credits scene, which I forgot about both times I watched this, first when it originally premiered and second when I watch this now, but a post-credit scene shows a mural of Livy and Crux and other prisoners and their captors that an Orbish says the pit. All right, let's do this. Let's go to the Bandits of Golok here. So this is by, I believe, this is 88 Studios, I believe this is what it is?
88 Pictures. They're based in Mumbai. 88
Pictures. Yeah, they're based in India. And off the bat, I just want to say that one of the things I appreciate most about this one is how seamless this one feels.
How so?
This one feels like it is, it has equal parts balancing the Indian culture influencing Star Wars and the like, okay, we're going to make a Star Wars story. Like, it has both of them, and I think they're just so in such perfect harmony with each other.
I think they did a great job as well of, like you said, absolutely blending the clothes, the environment, everything that kind of had a lot of elements of the Indian traditions artistically, musically. I thought it was really cool to see a lot of familiar things, the Inquisitors, the Stormtroopers, yeah, everything, kind of the lightsabers.
Absolutely the short of all of them, I gotta say, that I think has the deepest cut references of any Vision shorts.
I was gonna say, I feel like there were a couple of pretty specific Rebels references in there.
Well, the ones I specifically figured out, and I want to specifically see when this was made. Yeah, I know this could absolutely work. There are a couple of things that I'm thinking of. Of course, the Purge Troopers looked fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like those from Fallen Order. Even just going on the train, like going on that train, some of the first things, Jedi Thorian, we see that Kosian, like Jedi Master Tara Sanube, they look really good. For the first few seconds, I thought I was watching a mainline Lucasfilm Animations short. Before we zoomed in on our characters, they had slightly different designs than in the Lucasfilm Animation style.
It did have a distinctly Clone Warsy feel to the animation at times, especially. It really reminded me of maybe season 3, season 4 of the Clone Wars. We see a lot of the textures almost looked as if they have that look of maybe clay worked by hand. It almost looks like they have thumbprints on them, or maybe they're painted. I thought that was pretty cool.
They remind me a lot of what we've been seeing in the Bad Batch, actually. Just those rich textures and stuff like that. Season 7 Clone Wars animation. Yeah. But it's, yeah, the Stormtroopers in this style look fantastic. I believe also there's an Aki there, too. And no offense to the people who did do this, by the way. Journey to the Dark Head doesn't have a lot of deep cut Star Wars references. And it's one of my favorite Vision shorts ever. Same thing with the Ninth Jedi. Again, not a ton of deep cut Star Wars references, but I bet the Bandits of Golok took the time to go, okay, this is one of the most, you could pretty easily pinpoint where this is in the Star Wars universe. This is one of the Vision shorts that adapts the best to canon.
Yeah, in my opinion. Absolutely. I think as well, it was interesting that the helmets looked like Rebel Stormtroopers specifically, I thought. I feel like this short really drew, not really a short almost, but I think this one really drew on not just Star Wars, but specifically the other Star Wars Lucasfilm animation shows.
I think it also
to get where it was going.
It also wanted to establish itself, and this is something I appreciate as we're mostly, again, other than season 17 coming up, but like mostly as we mostly dive into this era that's been heavily explored by Lucasfilm since they were bought by Disney, they really established this dark times period. Ragul, right? That's her name?
Yeah. Yes.
Rugal,
yeah, there we go.
Rugal even says directly to Ronnie and Charuk, right before the Inquisitor finds them, these are dark times. And that was look into the camera moment. I'm like, yeah, we get it, huh? It's the dark times, ha, very funny. I think that's what it does for me, is that it integrates itself in so well to a lot of the force sensitive stories in this era. Obviously, you have the troopers, the Purge Troopers from JFO, like inspiration. You have the Inquisitor, which looks like something, which looks like inspired by Rebels or Tales of the Jedi or wherever else we see Inquisitors, the Jedi games, whatever, Obi-Wan Kenobi, all that kind of stuff. There's another reference here that's incredibly Obi-Wan Kenobi that we'll get to later, but it's bringing from a lot of, it feels very much in the mold of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Rebels, the Jedi games. It fits very well with them. Yeah.
I feel like something else I appreciated about this episode, and something where it feels like it strayed farther, went in its own direction as well, was the music. I think. What did you think about the soundtrack for this episode? Because I was struck by how out there the soundtrack felt.
In terms of what we heard for Star Wars. Yeah, it was definitely. It was, I think, in my opinion, the most heavily Indian influenced of any part of this was the music, and I thought I was very surprised at how much I thought it went really well. I think, of course, expanding Star Wars' cultural palette in terms of everything, but of course, in music is extremely important. And I think that's something that the Kyners have done very well, which is that they have included new and interesting sounds in Star Wars. And of course, Goranson's done that too. But of course, getting more and more diverse Star Wars composers, I believe that, I don't know if this is confirmed yet, but I'm pretty sure that the composer of The Acolyte, I forget exactly what his name is, but the composer for The Acolyte is the first ever Black composer of a movie or television show. So, like, it's great to get that representation in there. So I think that's great. And I think that, again, it lends itself to the, this is made by an Indian studio and they're absolutely putting their influences into this. So, I think that's 100%. Where it leans into it the most, other than like some designs, like that Inquisitor design. That Inquisitor design is so cool.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That Inquisitor design
was sick. Absolutely, I agree.
Is exactly what I would think. Is exactly what I think it would look like in that style. They just kind of nailed it. The blend of, he's literally a mustache twirling villain, and he has a long mustache. Those gold platings, and it's so incredibly done. The moment I saw that infamous Rebels lightsaber on the back, or not Rebels lightsaber, Inquisitor lightsaber, but of course it was popularized by Rebels with the lightsaber and then the two hinges over it, I was like, I got instantly hyped. That's the thing. This is the Vision short that it feels like it's most for Star Wars, like diehards. That's what it feels like. But like, this is a Vision short, not for the film fans, but for the Rebels fans, for the Jedi games fans, especially for the Obi-Wan Kenobi fans, for a reason we'll get to later. But no, of course, as always, when I think what's so great about Visions, and I think a lot of these stories come down to this, Visions, and I think it's fantastic, is that it's about these intrapersonal relationships. Of course, this one's really about the relationship between Charuk and Rani, and we get to see how important they are to each other, so that when the end comes, it's made that more devastating. And I think that there's even going to the beginning with Charuk and Rani, with those sweets, with Rani pulling it with the Force, and like, yeah, instantly, as soon as she pulls that tree with the Force, you're like, she's going to be in trouble.
That's definitely the pattern that's been set up by these Visions episodes so far, is that generally if you are a young Force sensitive individual, you better watch your back.
Yeah, especially in the era of the Empire.
Something that I wanted to call attention to as well. First of all, Eli, maybe this was just me, and I'm not sure if this was intentional or not, but when Charuk was on top of the train holding the lollipops, I think either he or a stormtrooper said a line that was strikingly similar to in Spark of Rebellion, when the stormtrooper confronts Ezra Bridger on top of the troop transport, and he says, "You did all this for fruit?" I can't remember what the line was in this case. It was something like, "All that for sweets," or something.
Yeah, but, and that was not.
And he was also on top of the train.
That was not Spark of Rebellion.
You're right. That was Fight or Flight.
It was Fight or Flight.
My mistake. Yeah. Fight or Flight. Wow. Gosh. Wow. Me, the Rebels number one fan, getting it wrong. How embarrassing. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but that along with the styling of the helmets and the fact that they used the stormtroopers were riding the Rebels speeder bikes. They were not riding the 74 Zs that we see in the movies on Endor.
You'd be the person to notice that.
For instance, I would be the person to notice that, of course. But I thought I enjoyed the Rebels. I enjoyed the little Rebels pointers here and there. I liked it. And I think that absolutely just goes back into what you were saying, Eli, how this one really does take its cues from Star Wars animation. And as an episode, that's really, that really feels like the direction that it's headed in. And we're going to put our spin, we're going to put our spin onto it, and we're going to make it our own.
Yeah.
But it's not Star Wars that we're making our own. It's Star Wars animation that we keep referencing back to. And I enjoy that.
I'm not trying to say that the others don't have this, because they absolutely do, and I don't want to imply that the others don't have this, but there is this deep respect for the Star Wars canon and what Disney's trying to do with the franchise in this short specifically. There's this deep respect for it. You can tell that these people understand, not just thematically wise, which is ultimately the most important thing, but in terms of like actual like aesthetics and characters and like tones, like they really get what Disney is trying to do with Star Wars, especially in that Dark Times era, which I really appreciate.
Absolutely. How about that lightsaber duel? I feel like if you're ready for it, I feel like we got to talk about the lightsaber duel.
Yeah. Going back a little bit, like a little before that, I do love when the Inquisitor reveals, oh yeah, I've burned down entire villages looking for Ronnie.
Yeah.
That was incredibly metal. And that was like, that instantly was like, okay, yeah, no, this is the Empire we're talking about. They will same do anything Empire. They have to. Yeah, same old Empire. That's the Empire is going to be a big common theme in all three of these episodes, and what they take from people and how they affect people's lives specifically. But yeah, no, this one is, yeah, if you're a Force sensitive, you are in danger. Rugal actually being the Jedi is a actually being a former Jedi, at least we can assume that she is actually a former Jedi, is a such a fantastic twist. Like, the idea that, like, again, that, and this is so great, this is something that sounds like something the bad guys would always, like, it'd be so typical of the bad guys to miss, is that she's hiding in plain sight. She's this old woman, I think the Inquisitor dismisses her as an old crone, I think is the quote. She can't be dangerous, right? Right? She's this old woman. She's this old helpless woman. There's nothing to worry about, right? Until, of course, she defends Ronnie and Charuk from the Inquisitor, and then the Inquisitor realizes way too late that maybe there was something to worry about.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah,
it was just great.
Yeah, that lightsaber duel looked fantastic. The way the lightsaber specifically, the way they moved, the way we saw them streaking through the air, I thought was really, really good. And I thought that it made the strikes feel more powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that the choreography, the movement, everything about this duel was absolutely perfect. And I thought that it was one of the best lightsaber duels in Star Wars that I had seen in recent memory. To be honest with you, it was up there with one of the finest, I think, in animation. Maybe not in terms of the emotional punch and the overall impact, but in terms of just the raw choreography and the dynamism of it, I was really impressed. They really kicked some ass with that one. I was like, wow, that's quite something.
No, it's damn good. I agree, it's damn good. And she fells that Inquisitor, and good riddance, honestly. And then, of course, she leads them to this safe house, which, by the way, I know they have a while, they work on these animation stuff for a long time, but this was released in mid-2023. Obi-Wan Kenobi was released, of course, in mid-22. You gotta be thinking the same thing that I'm thinking of what she's leading her to, right?
The path?
That's the path, right?
It's possible, yeah. It's absolutely possible.
Like, she even says, she literally says, the path is only meant for you. There are others like you here. That sounds like a dictionary definition of the path.
It could be, yeah. These are non-canon, so we don't really know. But if we had to guess, that's a darn good guess, I would say.
Yeah. And like the idea of this is a story. Of course, some of the Star Wars stories, I don't need to be canon. Again, that's the point of these, is they don't need to fit in perfectly with the Star Wars universe. But if this is canon, I would love that. If this one's canon, I think it would fit so extremely well. I just think it would be great. Ronnie being able to meet up with Corran Horn and all the other and Roken and Quinlan Voss, maybe, if he's still working with the Path. And Reva, maybe, if she's redeemed and working with the Path. Sign me up. Yeah, this short was really damn good. I wrote in my notes, an incredibly lore-consistent and theme-consistent story with canon Star Wars, while still having a unique story with a different cultural lens to tell. It ranks high on my visions ranking for a reason. I just adjusted my visions ranking, which I'll post probably in the description of this episode. This short is number 5. This is my fifth, number 5 out of 18 shorts. I quite enjoy this one, and I'm really impressed by it.
I really enjoyed this one as well. I think that key challenge with this just format and way of storytelling is it can be difficult in a short time span. It is difficult in such a short time frame to put together sometimes a compelling or a poignant or emotionally potent story. But I think that they do a reasonably good job here. And then once you include how remarkable the art direction, the animation, the lightsaber fight, the music, all of that was, and how unique and wonderfully delightful it was, I really enjoyed this one. And this was one of my favorite of the Visions episodes that we've seen so far.
Yeah, no, it's really damn good. It's just really good. I think they did a great job on this one. I think 88 Pictures did a great job on this one. I'll just spoil this one. This is my third favorite of season 2 of Visions specifically. I thought there was just some great. I just thought it was a really well told story. That's what it comes down to for me. It was just a really well told story. Let's get to In the Stars. In the Stars, for me, I feel like In the Stars is has what I'd call Star Wars Rebels syndrome for me. It's not that I hate this. It's not that I hate this short. It's that I remember when this short released, everybody, like, there were a bunch of people calling, like, they were saying, like, oh, this is the best short of Vision Season 2. Oh, this is, like, the best Vision short of all time. And I like it a lot. It definitely improved quite a bit on the rewatch for me. But it currently sits around the middle of my Visions ranking. Again, it's not bad. It's just, I like other stuff better.
Fair, that's fair enough. Yeah, I think this episode was pretty cool. So it's from Punk Robot, which are they're based out of Chile. And to me, this actually had a very similar vibe to Ao's song from Triggerfish, visually at least.
I think interesting.
The stop motion-y effects. I think a lot of the framing, the focal lengths that they use, the focus pulls, using a wider variety of focals in this to really get some interesting, more live action, film-like effects. With the focus, with shots and scenes where, you know, only a certain amount of it is in focus, as opposed to a lot of animation where that really doesn't happen as much, made it feel a lot like claymation or physical stop motion, which I thought brought a really unique feel, a unique vibe to the episode that I appreciated, I think, when watching this one.
Interesting. Yeah, there is a very, as I was talking about, the tonal inspiration of Bandits of Golok from Rebels and Obi-Wan Kenobi and the Jedi games. You know what this short feels like it got a lot of inspiration from?
What's that?
Like, you're telling me that Nemec or Vel or Cinta wouldn't fit, or Luthen wouldn't fit well into this? For me, short has Andor's name written all over it.
Yeah,
and no, I do not mean that.
Absolutely, you're so right.
And I do not mean this in a bad way. Actually, I actually like the tone of this. I think even a bit more than I like the tone of Andor, unsurprisingly, because this one involves space magic and Andor doesn't. But it's about, and the Punk Robot Studios, they've said it is about, it is an allegory about the destruction of their world. Is an allegory to the, is a metaphor to the destruction of Chile by is there southern parts of Chile by colonialist powers, by imperialist powers. Empire like in Andor, again, like in Aldani, for example, like breaking through and not really caring about anything on the world or its people or its materials, just going bulldozing through, doing whatever the hell they want. And it is about the anti-fascist resistance to the evils of colonialism.
Yeah.
And It was a I thought that was really I remember like liking that the first time, but I think I connected with it more this time because of how it connected specifically to the Force. That's the thing I like that I appreciate about this one, not as opposed to Andor, but looking at Andor, Andor has a lot of those anti-fascist, anti-colonialist themes in it, which is great. And there's so tons of stuff I love in Andor, don't get me wrong, but this has the space magic in it, and I think it welds the Force into the narrative so well while still making it feel very much Andor, and that's what I really appreciate about it.
Yeah, I think I didn't really think about that, but you're right. There absolutely are a lot of parallels here, I think, visually as well as thematically. I think I really liked all the storytelling sections with kind of the rock paintings that
The
started
rock on
glowing.
the paintings was fantastic. I love that method of expression. There's a quote I wrote down about that, which when Coten says to her younger sister, T'Chyna, we can't keep painting. We need that water to survive. And T'Chyna kind of pushes back on that and was like, yeah, you need the water to survive, but you need the paintings to live.
Yeah.
That's the way of keeping your history. That's the way of keeping telling your story. And those are, of course, I'm not trying to say that's more important than water to drink. I'm saying that those also have value. And
Yeah,
that is,
absolutely.
and as somebody who is so interested in the nature of storytelling, I think that is a very reflection on the Campbellian monomyth and how that inspires Star Wars, about how societies and cultures tell stories and how they keep their traditions alive, often more often than not, through the use of stories. Whether you're looking at Greek mythology, whether you're looking at Norse mythology, whether you're looking at the tales they told in ancient Egypt, or in certain groups of Native Americans, or whatever, what have you. One thing that humans have in common across the globe consistently is we tell stories.
Absolutely.
And I really love that. But yeah, and then their mother being destroyed, like leading that resistance against the Empire. One of the things I love the most about that specific sequence is that it is made very clear that against the stormtroopers, against the foot soldiers of the Empire, she was kicking ass.
Yeah,
She was going to town.
absolutely, yeah.
But what did her in?
Just the Empire, their
Yeah, but
numbers.
no, but specifically, it's the AT-ST.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if you think about this, probably also created from materials that were strip mined and stolen from other worlds. Very much, their mother was killed by minerals that were likely exploited from people just like them.
Yeah.
And that's the true evil of the Empire. And I definitely think that their mother was force sensitive in some ways, especially because, of course, stuff we see later in that mythology about them living on the stars, that feels like a very Jedi. I'm not saying she was a Jedi, I don't think she was, but definitely they have their own view of the Force.
Yeah,
That's what we're
definitely.
seeing a lot in the new canon of
The
different
beliefs about it,
societies
for sure.
having different views of the Force. Of there's this part there's a story in the Legends of Luke Skywalker where Luke comes across society that thinks about it as the tide. And thinks about it with relationship to their ocean. We have the Witches of Dathomir, who have that dark magics and rituals and shit, and how that's how they connect with the Force. We have you could even go to Orphni on fucking fuck Aline. You could go to Orphni on Aline in that Mercy Mission episode with C-3PO and R2-D2 when they go to provide her quick relief. Remember, and they get trapped down under the thing.
Yep.
You could do all those things, and there are all these different interpretations about how people interpret the Force and how people interact with the Force. And I think that the people on this planet and the stars interact with the Force in a really interesting way.
Absolutely, yeah, they do. It's unique. It's unique for sure. And I wonder how it ties into the beliefs that they see about the stars. I think it's cool. I think it's quite cool.
Yeah. And on their way to get the water, they're about to leave empty-handed, but then T'Chyna goes back. That Imperial officer throws her over, and then that sequence of Coten running to get her in slow-mo like that, with the dramatic twists and turns of the camera, I thought was really well done. And then I love that the fact that Tachina is always the one who is the more optimistic. As the younger one, she was always the one saying, hey, maybe we can do this. Hey, maybe we can do this. Hey, there still might be hope for us. While Koten, who is obviously scarred by what happened to her mother, is a bit more of the pessimist. But that Koten is the one who needs to believe and use the Force. That she's the one who gets that lesson. I think it's so great. Because they could have easily had it the other way, and that would have been fine. Tachina doing that would have been fine. But her being the one who has to save, in a very real way, the future in her younger sister, I thought was a really apt metaphor, and I thought it was done, that was conducted very well.
Yeah, absolutely it was. Do you have any other thoughts before you want to give your overall thoughts about this episode? I don't have too much else to say about this
one. All I'll just say is, of course, the AT-ST approaches them like they did, like it did their mother, but they know what to do this time. I think this is a really good one as well. What are your overall thoughts on this one?
Overall, I thought stylistically, I thought it was very interesting. It wasn't my favorite, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Thematically as well, I think some parts of the story, I think execution wise, could have been done a little better. Like I said, I'm not going too hard on any of these because of the inherent kind of challenges that this one episode format poses. I don't have unrealistic expectations necessarily for these episodes. So overall, I had a pretty positive view of this one. I enjoyed it, and I was intrigued by the things that it brought to the table.
Yeah, this is my least favorite of the three of these. Not because it's bad, far from it, but I think it's really, again, it's great anti-fascist, anti-colonial storytelling. There's a lot of great, unique energy to this one about that resistance against occupiers and all that kind of stuff and stuff. Like, I think the use of water in this is a really interesting device that, like, they use water even in a way that I feel like we haven't seen in Star Wars, even though Star Wars uses water a lot as this tool. Obviously, they burst the water pipes, causing to get rid of the Empire. Water is very important to this story, but I really like it. It's, again, it's around the middle of my Visions ranking, which I will post, but it's really good. It's really good. I like it a lot. All right, and finally, the pit. The pit is this one is interesting because it was animated a lot by a Japanese studio, but it was like the story and a lot of stuff like that was produced by Lucasfilm in Northern California, and it was made by this guy follows me on Twitter actually, which is crazy. Filmmaker from Oakland, Leandre Thomas, who I think, and also was co-directed, it was written by him and co-directed by Thomas and Justin Ridge of Lucasfilm fame, who was the showrunner for season 3 of Star Wars Rebels and also Star Wars Resistance, as well as directed 4 episodes of The Clone Wars, 2 episodes of Star Wars Rebels, and 2 Rebels shorts as well. So these are people, also Ridge worked a lot with Dave Filoni before Lucasfilm on Avatar The Last Airbender. So these are very experienced hands going at this. Of course, we start out on that planet with the forced labor. I think that Thomas has made no secret about this episode and specifically where it came from, because obviously... Yeah, he works on video production for Lucasfilm, and he's also a Black American, and this seems to me like it's really in response to a lot of the reckonings that the United States has had with its own structural racism over the past few years.
Absolutely, yeah,
and with its and went to it. Yeah, and of course we start off like that, especially with the prison angle of it, where a lot of people, especially a disproportionate amount of brown and black people in the United States of America, are unjustly imprisoned and forced to do ridiculous amounts of unpaid labor. If people want to know more about this, I highly recommend Star Wars adjacent director. She's never actually done anything with Star Wars, but God, I hope she does someday. And just great director overall. check out Ava DuVernay's documentary 13th on Netflix. It's really good. And it explains a lot of this stuff about how the prison system has become, for quite a few people, slavery under another name. And it's horrifying. And very much, I feel like the empire is a metaphor in this, is a symbol in this for a lot of the worst conservative white supremacist forces that are working in our country today. And it's a, yeah, of course, we get the Star Wars tie-in that they're harvesting Kyber, which I really appreciate, because that adds to the drama of, like, they're mining these things that are most famous for their use by an order that the Empire also completely wiped out. So nobody's safe from this fascist machine.
I enjoyed this episode. I thought that the shot near the beginning where we have the time lapse of the city going up with all the lights streaming to and from the pit, that was pretty cool. I think symbolically trying to show, hey, we have sometimes when we have these great things, these great cities and whatnot, think about where that comes from. And in that shot, that's literally saying, hey, think about where this is coming from here and where else this could be happening, obviously. And then we come back and we see that the pit is many times deeper than it was at the beginning of the episode when the Kyber crystal is first found. So yeah, I thought this was a pretty cool episode. I don't have too much, I feel like, to say necessarily about the plot, but it was certainly well done. And I don't know what you thought, but I thought that the animation, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty gorgeous, obviously.
The time lapse I thought was a really nice device. And it's something I want to see more in Star Wars. I guess I'll go to the main theme that I want to get to, which is the idea of what Crux tells the young girl. I forget her name right now. What's her name again? It's Livy. Crux says to Livy, which is they'll do the right thing if they follow their light. And that chant of follow the light. The idea of, look, people might not be aware of our plight, but if we make them aware, then they can't ignore us. And it's something specifically for me about the thesis of this. People will do the right thing if they're shown a way. This is just straight up human compassion. This is people coming together in the face of fascism to band together and unite. And beautiful. I think, and of course that's a huge theme of Star Wars, and it is the metaphors cannot be clearer. The Empire is clad in the same garb, with the same clothes, same equipment, same uniform fascist stuff, but there are these different, diverse, many multiple perspective people who are rallying against the Empire. And it's pretty easy for them to break the Empire's defenses. The Empire, it turns out, really, it doesn't really seem to care about the people in the pit, which makes it easier for them. But even that, the Empire doesn't care. They just need the people that they need, and then they'll throw them away like tools. Which, again, all of this, again, I think it just understands what Star Wars is from a thematic point of view at such a core level. I think it's a great thematic extension of the line I love at the end of The Rise of Skywalker, when the people's fleet comes. Where did they get a whole navy? It's not a navy, sir. It's just people. The galaxy, in the end, on Exegol, was not saved by the Rebel Alliance, the Resistance, the Jedi, what have you. It was saved by people. It was the first time that the galaxy essentially rescued itself. The idea that, like, again, I love the Jedi as much as the next Star Wars fan. I love these mystical figures and how they can teach us about ourselves. And I'm more gravitated, I gravitate a little bit more core stories about the space wizards than about, quote unquote, the regular people of the galaxy. Hence my like over shows like Obi-Wan Kenobi, as opposed to my, as opposed to Andor. Again, not that I hate Andor, I don't. But there is something incredibly potent to me about the fact that if you have the magic space wizard powers, great, you can help. But if you don't, you can still help as well.
Yeah, that absolutely.
Ultimately, it's about people standing up and saying no more, and saying this isn't right, and we're going to stand up and fight for what we believe in.
Gosh, Eli, it sounds like you'd really love this show called Andor.
We'll get to Andor when we get to Andor.
Yeah, no, all good.
And
just messing around.
Again, I think mostly, I'll say this, I like the second half of that season a lot more than I like the first half of that season.
It's a slow burn for sure.
But that those community themes, of course, combined with a lot of those, the themes of the Force, I deeply admire this. This is my favorite Vision short, just because of those themes. I remember tweeting about it again shortly after Landry Thomas, the writer and co-director of this, followed me, which was a crazy moment. I hope that he gets more stuff to do with Star Wars. Visions or not, honestly, I think he did a fantastic job with this.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I continue to be impressed by this short. I continue to be impressed. I was impressed then, and I'm impressed now. Yeah.
Very good work from him. Very impressive. I hope that we see more from him. Absolutely.
Yeah. This is my favorite Vision short, and it's not really particularly close.
Wow. Your favorite. It is a good one. It is a very good
one. Yeah, it's ranked number one. It's my favorite of the season. Yeah, my current top five, actually, because we've watched all but one of them for In a Galaxy. Number five is Bandits of Golok. All but two of them. Never mind. We've watched the majority still. Number five is Golok. Number four is someone we haven't watched yet, The Ninth Jedi.
Yeah.
Three is Journey to the Dark Head, which we watched last episode. Two is The Twins, which we haven't watched yet. And one is The Pit. So, yeah. I love this episode. I'm really glad we got to it now.
Me too. This was a good trio of episodes we had here. Really,
it was.
Really
I thought it was a damn good trio of episodes. But I think that's going to wrap up this episode of Star Wars in the Galaxy. Next week, we get started on season 17 of Star Wars in the Galaxy.
That's right.
Oh boy, am I excited. Let's do this. Let's fucking do this. Young Jedi Adventures. Episode.
We knew it's been coming.
Episode one, and we have a guest joining us. We have cosplayer, Twitter user, and somebody who I'm friendly with in the Star Wars community, Isabella at Isabella Crafts on Twitter, will be joining us. She is also a big fan of Young Jedi Adventures. I'm excited to hear her thoughts on these first two episodes. The way Young Jedi Adventures works is because it's a kids show. And smaller kids usually have a shorter attention span. The 20-minute episodes are divided into two 10-minute stories. And sometimes in our watch-along, and I will post the full list of episodes we're watching for this season, sometimes in our watch-alongs, I will say, okay, I'm going to take this 10-minute story from this episode and this one from this episode. I've curated this one decently into my favorite stuff and just stuff that I think is most relevant for the story, but for the first episode, we are going to just straight up watch the first two episodes of Young Jedi Adventures straight through. The first one is called The Young Jedi. The second one is called Yoda's Mission. The third one, and that's the first episode. And then the second episode, the first one is called Nash's Race Day. And then the second one is called The Lost Jedi Ship. I'm very excited to get to that. I'm very excited to see Jacob's thoughts about Young Jedi Adventures. I'm telling you, I've been yapping about this to a lot of our friends in the space. I understand how much of a broken record I've become. But, like, it's really good.
We shall see. All will be revealed.
It's, like, really damn good.
All will be revealed.
I'm so excited to dive into this. But in the meantime, I think that's going to be it for this episode of Star Wars in the Galaxy. Thank you for listening to this episode. In the meantime, until we return next week, you can follow us on everywhere at In the Galaxy Pod. You can listen to us at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, everywhere you listen to your podcast will be there. You can follow me. My link tree is linktr.ee/_OchiFan327. Epic Confrontations, by the time this releases, I think our March match will have released. Hope you enjoyed Sean Broom versus Nikki Kumar. We had a lot of fun doing that match. I haven't recorded it at the time of this recording, but we will in a few days. I'm excited to see how that match will play out. And I think there's nothing else. All we'll say is may the force be with you.
Always.
Always.